top quality collision repairs. Northwest Auto Body, with trained technicians and environmentally friendly paints, has grown into its second location in Ponderé.
Good morning. You have tuned into the KRFY Morning Show on Thursday, July 9th, by my watch. It's just a hair after 8 o'clock in the morning, and this is the KRFY Morning Show, Thursday edition with Jim and Jack here in the studio with our special guest this morning, Susan Fiskin. The KRFY Morning Show, of course, every Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m., we do have a full show for you today. I've got the weather queued up, a little bit of fire information, and then an interesting conversation coming your way with local author, memoirist, Susan Fiskin. Before we get into that, Jim, what do you have to say over there? A brief word?
Yes, I'd like to say happy birthday to my baby sister in Mechanicsville, Virginia. She turns some age today, but I'm sure if she's streaming, she would hear us. But just want to say best birthday wishes to Kathy. But before we go much farther, I do want to make mention, Jack, of last week. We had on the KRFY Morning Show three guests, one of whom was Laura Bree. And this Sunday, Laura Bree passed away. And she was vice president of the Foundation for Human Rights Action and Advocacy. She'd been a member of the Pride Foundation Idaho Leadership Action Team. And she's in 2008, she was a member of the board of the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force. Very active in the cultural and political scene here in North Idaho. And her activism, her energy will be missed. And on behalf of 88.5 KRFY and the morning show, we'd like to express our condolences to the Bree family. And last night, Velma Queen of Fun did a wonderful musical tribute to Laura, and I hope people tuned in to hear that. But 1 week ago, she was with us, and life turns on a dime, and we will miss you, Laura.
Yes, indeed. A good friend of the show and friend of the station. She was a volunteer here at KRFY and frequent guest on the morning show in all sorts of different capacities. Taking a quick look at the weather, coming up, we've got another smoky kind of day, but other than that, about the same as what we've been looking at these past few days. High of 93, areas of smoke, and then sunny this afternoon. Tomorrow, or tonight, smoky again, down to the high 60s this evening. The high 50s this evening, low 60s tonight. Keep your windows open. And then tomorrow, chance of thunderstorms, high of 92. It will be fire weather this weekend as well. Friday night, the chance of thunderstorms continuing, then chance of showers. Saturday, cooling off a little bit from the 90s to the 80s. Chance of showers, slight chance of thunderstorms, and 80s again on Sunday. Looks like it's going to be sort of a partly cloudy, possibly rainy weekend, but I'm sure there will be plenty of sun mixed in there too, if the history of the summer so far is any guide. Speaking of fires, the latest update on specifically that Cape Horn area fire, residents who have been evacuated will be allowed to return to their homes starting actually right about now, 8 a.m. this morning, after filing necessary paperwork, filing necessary paperwork with the Sheriff's Department. Those who have been evacuated are now allowed to return. Roadblocks do remain intact and access is still limited down near Bayview, but it does look like they've made a good amount of progress over the past few days. They're claiming containment is currently at 40%. They do have fire breaks in place, and they're still watching to see how they hold before declaring the fire more contained than that. Current size of the fire, 1,155 acres.
Wow.
Yeah, that's big.
We could use some rain, like right about now, and mm-hmm. really local, if we could.
Yes, very localized.
Our thoughts are going out to all of the people impacted by the fire, and I'm sure there are a number of people out there who are holding their breaths to see what is happening.
Who's our guest in the studio this morning,
okay,
Jim?
Okay, well, this is continuing our tribute to Writers Week. On Tuesday, Chris and Susie had two writers, authors, and we're going to continue that today. With Susan Fiskin. This culminates with the Sandpoint Summer Book Fest and Prose Slam tonight, which I will talk about later. Susan wrote a book, authored a book called Playboy Mansion Memoirs. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Jim.
Good to have you here. Let's just jump right in. And could you give an overview of the book? What's it about? What would a reader come to know?
Well, Jim, in the 70s, from 1975, I had a rather unusual time period of my life. I was working my way through UCLA as a co-ed, and I was selling sandwiches in high-rises in Beverly Hills. And one of my customers was a rich 30-something handsome guy, and we went out on one ill-fated date, and about a month later, he invited me to a party at Hugh Hefner's L.A. Playboy Mansion. Hefner had just moved to Los Angeles from Chicago. And I went and met Hefner, and he liked me, and I liked the place. It was like the best country club in the universe. And he invited me back and invited me back and invited me back, and before long, it took about 2 months before he put his arm around my waist in his opulent foyer and told me I was now part of his Playboy Mansion family. And for the next 5 years, I was pretty much free to come 24/7.
And so your book focuses in on that five-year period.
Correct. That's a definition of a memoir. It's a slice of someone's life. And I want to add the tagline to the title. It's Playboy Mansion Memoirs, Lessons Learned from the Front Lines of the Sexual Revolution. So while I was at the mansion, I was very much in the 70s and very much into wild experiences. But I also meditated and journaled every day. And that's what laid the foundation for the book, that I was in those experiences, but also watching them, kind of like being the piece on the chessboard and the chess player. So I was on the board playing, and I was watching the board from above.
Okay, so you were brought to this world, totally apart, separate from. What do you attribute the being asked back, being asked to be a permanent member, as permanent as one could be at the mansion? How would you, you said that you, for a couple of months, you went and then you've got received a permanent invitation.
Correct.
What do you feel was behind that permanent invitation that was not extended to other women?
The way I succinctly put it in the book is that it was the perfect confluence of time, place, personality, and cup size. So I had the right personality. I had the looks. I was enthusiastic. I love to laugh. Repartee is my strong suit. And that's very much centric to the culture that Hefner had there. So I could sit around. I could talk with anybody about just about anything. And I was very sexual. So when you put all of that together, kind of cute, fun, sexual, lusty, busty, co-ed, I kind of had the credentials that led to my success in that environment.
Could you talk about the milieu, you know, what life inside the mansion was like when you talk about you were selected because of all the reasons you gave. What was it like? What were some of the qualities and characteristics?
It's such an unusual culture. It was. I went back again after 32 years last year. We'll talk about that later. Really, it's a combination of Hefner. And Hefner grew up longing to be part of Hollywood. He was a child with a really cold, distant family. And
Midwestern.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And his parents were incredibly strict and very religious. Methodist, I believe. And he wanted nothing to do with that. So he took his kid brother all the time to the movies. So when he moved to California, you know, people forget what a huge player in the world he was then. This guy was incredibly rich and phenomenally powerful. He was a great advocate for social justice, personal freedom. And so when he moved to California, he became an A-lister in Hollywood. He was able to attract all of the movie stars that he'd watched over the years. So there was definitely a culture of film, which was great for me because I'm a film freak. And so I got to watch movies with the people that made them before they were released. So I could talk to a director like Robert Brooks, who did Blackboard Jungle and Looking for Mr. Goodbar. And I could talk to him about that film and go, wait, the scene that... So it was fabulous in that direction. I never knew who I'd meet. So the women were all beautiful. And the men were primarily smart, rich, funny, powerful. And so that was the distinction of the culture. Hefner was 49 when I met him.
You might not know this. Do you know when he moved and purchased the mansion in L.A.?
Yeah, it was 1975. And that's the year that I began. It was just several months before my introduction to him.
Okay, so he moved from the Chicago mansion to the L.A., the Playboy Mansion West in 1975.
Yeah, he was dating Barbie Benton.
Okay.
And he was using his bunny jet to fly into California all the time because she was also at UCLA. And finally, one day, he just decided, she found the mansion. And he totally redid it. I mean, it was flat grounds. He made rolling hills. He had the only private zoo in California at the time. He made it incredibly opulent. And 1975 was when he, you know, it was just, I think, August of 1975 is when he officially moved.
And so your starting date, your introduction to it was?
October 3rd, 1975.
So the dust wasn't even off the... what do you want to call
it? The grotto.
I was going to say the dust wasn't even off the contract signing to own the house.
Actually, no. Before he moved in,
everything was done. Okay, so he purchased the property and the estate earlier, had stuff all done, and then he moved.
Correct.
Okay, smart man.
That building is, aside from everything else, just architecturally, it's a famous landmark.
Gothic.
Yeah. The Playboy Mansion of that time is so interesting to me. It's before my time, but the fact that it was...
There's a lot of things before your time.
I know. Well, I mean, you don't see Leonardo DiCaprio hanging out, as far as I know, hanging out at the Playboy Mansion anymore. But at the time, the cream of the... crop, the A-list crop, I think particularly the male stars of the time, that was a real hangout. It's very interesting.
Well, it was a unique culture in that people who were famous could come there and not be hassled. It was one of the only places they could go because everybody in the mansion walls were like, been there, done that. You know, it's like, oh, look, there's Dustin Hoffman, there's Warren Beatty, there's Paul Newman. It was just part of the culture. So for instance, when I met Robin Williams, he had just started Mork and Mindy. And this guy went from being a student in New York City. He was going to the School of Performing Arts. Juilliard is where he went with Christopher Reeve. They were roommates. And he was a street mime. And he'd do stand-up comedy like at midnight to four people. And he did this one stint on Happy Days. And within months, Gary Marshall made Mork and Mindy. And overnight, this 27-year-old kid became, everybody in the world knew who he was. And he was freaking out about it. But at the mansion, on the evening we spent together, no one was hassling him. And then when we shared some time that we can talk about or not later on, we came back into the main house and there were people that weren't acclimated to that culture. And I saw his energy fall. His face turned so sad because he'd talked about the price of fame. And that was a unique enclave where famous people could come and relax.
Speaking of the time, I mean, the people could go there and relax. I think it seems to me that things have sort of changed at Playboy. At least now it's famous for at least one reality show, a couple of reality shows.
I think
it's
just the one.
Okay, but it's certainly not as private as it used to be. It's not the exclusive Hollywood hangout that it used to be, or maybe it still is. I don't know.
Let's talk. Hef's 89 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I saw him last year, I hadn't been there for 32 years. And a girlfriend of mine who's a playmate who's in the book, Victoria Cook, August of 1980, brought me there. We met. She came from Florida. I came from Idaho. And we met at in L.A. and hung out for a while and had what might be our last frolic at the mansion. And, you know, Hef is an 89-year-old man. He's slow. He's my height now. He's profoundly deaf. So, and the parties, what happened was he made the corporation public in the 70s and regretted it because he's a real entrepreneur, likes to make the decisions for companies. So he bought it back, but didn't have enough money to buy all of it and had to bring in some investment bankers who own more of it than he. So he doesn't really have the free reign that he used to have. And many of the parties are now for pay. So the parties that we had and enjoyed as his guest are now corporate functions. And there are zillions of people. And they're parties that Hef would never attend. So he makes an appearance with his young wife.
And some are also charitable events that the estate is used for, let's say, an organization that wants to hold a fundraiser.
Always has been. I mean, those were my favorite events at the mansion were the fundraisers. Because then we got to pull on different people. See, I never knew who I'd meet there. And at the fundraisers, it was a whole new pool of people, like the National Organization for Reform of Marijuana Laws. Great party. a bunch of rich stoners. It was really way fun. Coyote, Call Off Your Old Tired Ethics, was a fundraiser for an organization that served the sex trade. And as well as, you know, Jerry Brown fundraisers. Hef was an incredible force in the progressive political movement. Still is, quietly behind the scenes, but that's mm-hmm. why he set up the Playboy Foundation, was to put his money where his mouth was.
Now, how do you look upon, it's been 32 years since you returned, in terms of writing the book, did it take 32 years to work through these memories? Why now with the book as opposed to 20 years earlier or 20 years from now?
I always knew I'd write a book, Jim, but what I never wanted to write was a kiss-and-tell expose. Almost all of the books that women have written, I think all of them, I think I've read them all, they all trash Hefner and they all trash the mansion and that lifestyle. I had a very different experience. And, you know, my position was unique. I was a very independent woman. I was a feminist in that world. And so why now? I've been a lifelong entrepreneur. I've been a coach and a speaker. And if you're a solopreneur, I don't know if you've ever been that, you're working all the time. You know, the definition of an entrepreneur is someone who's willing to work 12 hours to avoid working 8 hours for someone else. That's what life was. And so it wasn't till I moved to Idaho and gave my career a hiatus that I had the time to reflect and gain the perceptions that I needed to write about the book. And let's talk, it took me 8 years before I finally finished.
Was there any one thing that made you writer ready? In other words, right now I'm going to sit down and write it. Because this is something that I'm sure writers listening, and you'll be together tonight with a group of writers. When is a writer ready to write? Or is a writer mentally writing all the time? And so when you talk about this took years in order to put together, was there any one incident, anyone that, or you just found yourself, oh my goodness, I'm writing?
Winters. I grew up in California, so it's like year-round summer.
Okay.
And when I was here, when I first moved here in 2007 and 2008, the winters were horrific. We had like 10 feet of snow. Mm-hmm. It was horrible. And I'm not real fond of snow. So to tame my ADD-ish brain, winters were fabulous. I needed a project. And I did a lot of community service and a lot of volunteer work. And I'm a singer-songwriter. I've always been creative. And that's when I started going over my journals and making notes and which stories would be the best ones to tell and who are the famous men that I shared time with that whose memories stuck with me. You know, they affected my life. So I think that was it. It was winter.
It was winter. That's a good. Earlier, you referred to yourself, Susan, as a feminist. Now, some people might just look at the overall picture, and it's very difficult, I'd say, if unlike Jack, who wasn't born then, but to have been around in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, not to have developed an idea of Hefner and his world. And some people might say, wow, the word feminist there might be a disconnect between women in Hefner's world and feminism. And could you talk about that?
Absolutely. I mean, if you paid attention to Gloria Steinem, who as a reporter secretly became a Playboy bunny to see what the culture was like on the inside. And the bunnies were waitresses at the clubs. So playmates were centerfolds in the magazine. So how could I call myself a feminist in that culture? Well, feminism has gotten a really bad rap. People have ascribed all sorts of nefarious things to being a feminist. The definition of a feminist is someone who believes in the equality of men and women. So how I could say I was a feminist in that culture is that I was free to do whatever it is that I wanted to within the confines of good taste within any community, because it really was a community for me. I could spend time with whoever I wanted to. I came, I went, I spoke my mind. I did it with humor. You know, men were allowed to be bright without necessarily being funny. I found humor was a great softener. So I could say whatever it was that I believe politically. I mentioned some of these events in the book of those tipping points going, should I say anything? And every time I decided I would, because it didn't feel right to be subjugated in that male-centric culture.
But could one also say that the difference between the women in that culture is that the men could be ugly, old,
nasty.
Nasty. They could be unattractive. They could be all these things. But it seems to me that you mentioned two categories, which I think you were in a different category. You weren't a playmate. You weren't a bunny. You were there for other reasons. But, you know, I guess my notion is someone might say, gosh, Susan, you know, the men could just be slobs.
Absolutely.
So where does equality come in? Could a woman demonstrate some of those qualities or characteristics if she chose? And would she get invited back?
No.
Okay. You know, in other words, it's learning the what?
It's the culture.
I was going to say there weren't rules on the wall.
I wish there were. Would have been a lot easier.
Absolutely.
You know, being an intelligent, outspoken woman in that culture, there were no guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to really hone. One of the things I learned, the lessons learned, people skills. I learned how to get along with people really different from myself. Okay. And to learn to dance with that, because the women that crossed that line and didn't know how to pull back, that didn't know how to dance with it, were gone.
We're not invited back. We're here with Susan Fiskin, author of Playboy Mansion Memoirs, Jack and Jim. And we're going to take a break. We want to talk more about Susan, about the subject matter of her book, as well as authorship, about getting the book to print, which I'm sure some of you will be interested in. We have Susan mentioned Gloria Steinem. She had a little stint as a Playboy bunny in Atlanta. And we're also going to mention the website, and we're going to hit it awfully hard because I went there several times and it's a well-done website.
Thank you. I did it myself.
It is well done. We're going to play a song by another Playboy bunny, but she was much more north, I think in New Jersey, possibly New York. I'm not sure where, Deborah Harry, but she was the lead force and singer behind a group from the 80s called Blondie. Woo-hoo. And here is a Blondie song that I think is appropriate for summertime. The Tide is High on 88.5 KRFY.
The KRFY Morning Show is broadcast every Tuesday and Thursday live at 8 a.m. Tune in to 88.5 or stream us live from our website at 8 o'clock to hear the complete and unedited program, including musical selections. Due to our licensing, we are unable to include full songs in our downloadable podcasts. We now return to the KRFY Morning Show.
Yes, the tide is high. That's what we'd like from Lake Pendere, to sweep up over the shoreline and knock out those fires. Mm-hmm. That is ex-Playboy bunny Deborah Harry, lead singer for Blondie, with The Tide is High. And we're here with Susan Fiskin, author of Playboy Mansion Memoirs, Lessons Learned from the Front Lines of the Sexual Revolution.
Well, and it is a... It is a memoir. It does look back. It's going back to the late 70s and looking at the Playboy Mansion and that culture at that time, which is very different from what it is today. It's funny to think, I guess a lot of people forget that Playboy was also a source of some very important journalism at that time, and it was a very different, it was a much, much more mainstream kind of thing. It was somewhere, I guess, within the mainstream, closer to the mainstream than we think of it now. And that meant that you could get a lot of interesting people there who would be considered mainstream entertainers. Can you talk about any of the men who you met while you were at the Playboy Mansion?
I met tons. Mm-hmm. I write about 10 of them with whom I shared time. Some of them I dated for years. Some of them it was a fling. But these are the men that touched my life somehow. And you want to hear who some of them were?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Okay.
I don't. I've read about them. Go for it, Susan.
Arnold Schwarzenegger was one. Robin Williams, as I mentioned before. Warren Beatty. Hugh Hefner, Shel Silverstein, Robert Kennedy Jr., Dustin Hoffman, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Wilt Chamberlain. Who else?
Robert Duvall.
Yes. Peter Lawford. Many will forget. And it was rich. I mean, can you imagine? I was going to UCLA, which was literally 2 minutes from the mansion. So I would drive off campus and drive for 2 minutes, say my name at these huge gates, and they would swing open, and the world opened up to me. You know, I grew up a poor kid in Beverly Hills, and it sounds like an oxymoron, but we lived in a small apartment on the wrong side of Wilshire Boulevard, and I started work when I was 14. I wasn't like the other wealthy students that I went with. And to have access to that place of privilege was amazing to me. You know, I was like a kid looking, peeking in the windows, you know, clearing up the little unfogging a little space of the windows, looking into wealth, to going to being by the fire with a glass of champagne, enjoying the privilege of all these celebrities and producers and politicians. And, you know, I mean, Barry Goldwater Jr. and Sigmund Freud's son. And there were, you know, Jimmy Kahn. And it was like sitting around the dinner table and talking politics or talking films. And it was like one of the great salons of 18th century Europe. And I was like a courtesan. There was no pay for play. I don't know how that's gotten into the mix, but courtesans back in the day were the bright, independent women. They were, it was the only place where a woman could be smart and independent and as equal to a man as she possibly could be were the salons. And that's what that culture was like for me.
Did you, you mentioned both Robert Kennedy Jr. and Barry Goldwater Jr.
Yeah.
Did you?
Knew them both.
Interesting. Those are, well, I don't know about the juniors' politics, but I know that the seniors, their fathers, were certainly on about as far apart on the political spectrum as you could find.
You know what? If mm-hmm. Barry Goldwater were out there today, just like Ronald Reagan, he'd mm-hmm. be considered way too progressive for yeah. the current Republican Party. Bobby Kennedy Jr., I write about extensively in the book, and he is and was a fascinating man. You know, it was through his, he had such pain over his father's death that he masked it with drugs. You know, we're all want to have our, and it's public knowledge. I didn't write about anything that he hasn't talked about publicly before. And he came to Sandpoint 3-4 years ago. And I had no, you know, we dated for like a week back in the mid-70s. He was a law student. And I just finished UCLA, and we were introduced by Peter Lawford. And there's a whole chapter on him in the book. And what was fascinating was he did a fundraiser. I'll go back. He was busted for drug possession in the late 70s, early 80s. And he had finished law school, and he was found guilty with the amount of drugs you could put under your fingernail. I mean, it was not much of a bust, but he had to do 1500 hours of community service. And what he did was he volunteered his time for the Hudson Bay Riverkeepers. Well, what this did was it got him and sparked his passion for saving our water resources. And that's what he does today. He started the Keepers program, and they are at least national. There are scores and scores, and Lake Pondere River Water Lake Keepers, Lake Pondere
Water Keepers
is part of that. So he came for a fundraiser, and Jennifer Ekstrom was running the organization at the time, and I convinced her, because I'd done a lot of PR photography in my Hollywood days. It was my first business, and I convinced her that she really needed me to be there to take photographs. And here's this guy that I knew 35 years ago. And he spotted me after he got off the stage, and he said, "I know you." Wow. I mean, his people skills were so extraordinary. And we reconnected. There's a photo of the two of us in the book from the fundraiser. He's a fascinating man. His talk was eloquent without a note. He spoke for an hour and a half. He has a condition with his throat that he can't speak long. He spoke for an hour and a half till his voice gave out.
Wow. Before we get to about self-publishing your book and whatever, talk a little bit about the man whom you dedicate the book to, and who's different than all of the other men whom you spent time with.
God, okay. Well, I'm going to just interject one thing, if I may.
Go for it.
That the book is only available on my website.
And where could that be?
It's Playboy Mansion Memoirs, plural.com. And we'll talk about that when I talk about authors and self-publishing.
Perfect.
And you know, there's the book festival, we'll talk about that. And then I'll be at the farmer's market on the corner of 3rd and Oak on Saturday, signing books.
That would be Saturday, July the 11th.
It is. And so I dedicate the book to Hugh Hefner. Of course, without whom none of these experiences would have taken place. And I think what people are walking away with from the book is to really understand who this man was historically. When I sat to write his chapter, I was stumped. I couldn't figure out how to approach it until I realized that he was really two men in one pair of silk PJs. There was Hef, the man that I knew around his house, and he was a guy. You know, he was an 18-year-old romantically in love guy. And he was bright and accomplished, and he had some really interesting friends. But he was human. He was mortal. He had frailties. And then there's Hugh Hefner. And Hugh Hefner has a legacy that most people have no idea because it's gotten lost in people thinking he's just some dirty old man. His taste in women has never changed. You know, 20-something-year-old, tall, lanky, big-busted blondes with big smiles and blue eyes. And yet, as a pioneer in the realm of free speech, social justice, gay rights, women's rights, for instance, in 1955, 3 years after he started, 2 years after he started the magazine, he published an article called The Crooked Man. And The Crooked Man took place in a world where straight was aberrant and homosexuality was the norm. And this was about a closeted straight couple. And he got a lot of flack for that. I mean, this was a time when people couldn't even say the word homosexual in public. Yet this guy that's considered such a chauvinist and such a bigot opened up the doors to a conversation that was never there. He signed up and gave money to Ruth Bader Ginsburg in 1972 when she was running the women's rights campaign for the ACLU. He got a Lifetime Achievement Award from the NAACP, which is not known for offering white guys Lifetime Achievement Awards. He still has the Playboy Foundation Freedom of Speech Awards that every year award $10,000 grants to people who further freedom of speech. So he's an extraordinary man, and I don't think his legacy will really be known unless my book takes off incredibly well. We can keep our fingers crossed. They don't know what this man contributed to sexual freedom, to things that we take for granted today.
Speaking of your book taking off, I'm looking at the clock. We have community events coming up. You've self-published this book. Can you talk about to somebody out there who might be working on a book, a young author, and confronted with how does one get in print? How does one do something? What's your word to them, Susan?
Well, Jim, I've been a coach for 25 years, and so I always look at things from a coach's perspective. And when I explored the business and looked at traditional publishing, an author might get, you got to prostitute yourself to get in the hopes of getting an agent who you don't know is going to accurately represent you or represent you well. You don't know this person, but all of a sudden you're a business partner if you can get one. They then cut a deal with the big publishers. You lose all rights to your book. They can change anything, the name, the contents, but your name stays on it. They keep the movie rights. And then I found out that maybe after all expenses are taken out, the author might pocket 5% of net. So that if a book's $20, it wholesales for maybe $8. You take off all the printing costs. So you're looking at, 25 cents a book.
Pennies.
So then I said, okay, that's not acceptable. And it was, what's next? Then there are hybrid publishers. And they're much more equitable. You do keep the rights to your book. Many of them, like I worked with David Hancock at Morgan James, who loved the book, wanted to publish it, but has a huge Christian contingency in his business and couldn't figure out, how can I spin Playboy to my Christian partners? So they take 20%, but they give you, and know that the author's still doing your own marketing, your own publicity, your own everything. You're still drawing the business, your own editing. The publishers do virtually nothing these days. And when David couldn't carry my book, I said, okay, I'm going to explore doing it on my own, because never has the time been better. You know, I'm working with Create Space right now, and there's another company called Ingram Spark, which is an offshoot of Ingram Lightning, which is what the major publishers use. And Create Space, you can do your own book cover, your own internal copy, have it printed. You can order as few as one book at a time. So in other words, right now I'm signing all the books. And so I've bought books that I'll sign and I ship out or I deliver in person. What will happen as I move forward is that orders will come into the website. I will then ship those orders to Create Space. Create Space prints and ships them. I never have to touch a book. Tracking and everything is done through them. So never has there been a more opportune time to be a self-published author.
And again, the website is playboymansionmemoirs.com. And the word memoir is plural. Be sure to include that. And you can see Susan tonight at the Sandpoint Summer Book Fest and Prose Slam. That's tonight, 5 o'clock to 7:30 in the Byrne Building. That's the old Coldwater Creek Building. She will be there with a bunch of different writers, and they're going to be talking about, and it says local authors read, sign, and reveal. Okay, in closing, I see the time is winding down. What's next for you, Susan?
Well, Jim, what's next immediately? A, I've been a speaker for 25 years, so I'm really looking forward to getting out and hitting the road and doing some readings and signings, and there might be a one-woman show coming out of this. But I've also talked with a number of producers in Hollywood already, and we're talking about the possibility of doing a TV show along the lines of a glitzy Orange is the New Black, where you get the strong female characters with their backstories. So on the front end, you get all the Hollywood stuff. On the back end, you get the real women behind the scenes, and or a film. And in the film, I see Scarlett Johansson as me, mm-hmm. and I see John Hamm as Hefner.
Sure.
Dream big, dream big.
Hey. Mm-hmm.
Susan, we wish you the best of luck. Thank you so much for stopping by KRFY this morning. And again, tonight at the Byrne Building, we have the Sandpoint Summer Book Fest and Pro Slam. Susan will be there along with other writers. That begins at 5 o'clock.
That's the old Coldwater Creek Wine Bar.
Is it the wine bar or is it the building?
I think it's the wine bar because they're going to be serving drinks.
Oh. Okay, then it has to be the wine bar. Yeah. Walk up those steps. And then you'll see also, Susan, this Saturday at the Farmer's Market here in Sandpoint, July the 11th, and that opens at 9 o'clock. It'll be a nice day, and thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you, Jim. That's on Oak and 3rd.
Oak and 3rd in downtown Sandpoint. We're going to close out with a song by U2 from their Pop album from 1997, appropriately called The Playboy Mansion.
The KRFY Morning Show is available as a free download at krfy.org. You can also stream Panhandle Community Radio live from the website and find program schedules and more information about the station. While browsing krfy.org, support the station by clicking the Donate button on the right side of your screen and help keep Panhandle Community Radio commercial-free and a growing community resource.
That is U2 from their album Pop, The Playboy Mansion. We're going to get now into some of the upcoming events tomorrow night. Well, tonight is the Sandpoint Summer Book Fest and Prose Slam at the Coldwater Creek, old Coldwater Creek Wine Bar, but now the Burned Barrel. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow night, the IPA, Idaho Poor Authority, is going to have live music from 5 to 7 from Marty Perrin and Doug Bond. And then the winery also at the same time, only 5:30 to 8:30, Missoula's Acoustic Americana Duo, powine.com. With that is Britchy is the name of that group.
Oh, I think I've heard of them. That's a
winery tomorrow night.
At the winery tomorrow night. Let's see. Coming up this weekend, actually, just starting off this weekend, it'll be continuing next weekend as well. Red Hot Patriot, The Wit of Molly Ivins. The pugnacious Texas columnist specialized in a kind of dead serious humor designed to afflict the comfortable within an inch of their lives. This is about a journalist who was one of the first women warriors of journalism. Miriam Robinson, it plays the title role in this almost one-woman play. She delivers a winningly assured performance in Lyric Stage Company's generally satisfying production of Red Hot Patriot, directed by Ron Ragone. The Panada Playhouse production will take place in the Panada Little Theater. Showtimes are 7:30 p.m. all days, except for July 19th, which is a matinee at 3 p.m. Beer and wine will be available. Tickets available online at panada.org and in town at the POAC office and Eve's Leaves. That's this weekend, the 10th, 11th, next weekend, the 17th, 18th, and 19th.
On Saturday, July the 11th, not only can you catch Susan Fiskin at the Farmer's Market, signing her book and selling her book, but it's the 13th annual Antique and Classic Boat Show, and it runs from 10 to 3 p.m. at the Sandpoint Marina and Boardwalk. And it's going to also include the parade of boats on Sand Creek. There's going to be more than 50 boats, Jack. And boy, that's like a Woody station wagon, a wooden boat. That just is a throwback.
They're pretty cool.
This year, the charity is Cruising for a Cure is this year's theme to promote cancer awareness and inspire hope that someday this disease will be cured. If you want more information, you can contact BK Powell. He is the contact chairman at bk@officetechusa.com. That's the 13th Annual Antique and Classic Boat Show, Saturday.
The Great Sandpoint Flatwater Regatta, let's not forget, the Sandpoint Rotary hosts the canoe, kayak, and paddleboard fun run in Sand Creek. It's, of course, more of a fun paddle, I guess, starting at 10 a.m. at the Bridge Street Bridge. Call 946-6079 if you'd like to participate in that. It's also free first Saturday this weekend at the Bonner County History Museum, 611 South Ella, during the free first Saturday event held from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. Last Saturday being the 4th of July, they pushed it back 1 week, and now it is free first Saturday.
So you can get classic beer this weekend. Next weekend on Friday, July 17th, you can do a Taste of the Northwest wine tasting on the Shawnee Dees. It is Friday, July 17, 6 to 8 p.m., and includes a tour on beautiful Lake Pend'Oreille, 5 Northwest wines, and light appetizers. A portion of all tickets will be donated to Food for Children, a local charity. So that is Friday, July 17th, 6 to 8 p.m., a tour of Lake Pend'Oreille. You can sip wine, light appetizers. You can call 208-255-5253 to reserve your space or get more information. That's a good cause.
Here's an interesting, weird one. A little bit.
What's weird?
It's not so weird.
Something weird in North Idaho?
It's a little bit. It's a North Idaho specific, I guess I would say. It's the Selkirk Antler Expo. Very briefly, that's this weekend, the 11th and 12th. Everything Antler, held at Hickey Farms, 674 Hickey Road, and presented by the Idaho Big Game Foundation. It's from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. both Saturday and Sunday, and it's going to be a whole lot of antlers on display. All are invited to bring your favorite sheds and racks for everyone to admire. They can be scored, then safely displayed for all to view. In addition, there will be art vendors, lamps, knife handles, jewelry, even hand-blown glass antlers. It's going to be a...
All things antler.
All things antler. Very interesting. You're not going to find that anywhere else. I don't think even the big cities, even New York City, will not be having a Selkirk, a antler expo this weekend, I don't think.
Well, you know what I love about that is that one doesn't think very much these days of antlers, but for some people out there, it's a passion. Mm-hmm. And I love it. You know, yeah. I love it when something like this occurs. More power to them.
It is cool. Did we already mention Pauli O'Keery and the Rhythm
Method? No, I was wondering. We need to talk about DeLuna's.
Yeah, DeLuna's is hosting a Pauli O'Keery and the Rhythm Method. That's this Saturday, the 11th. Doors open at 5:30 p.m., just in time for supper, with a concert beginning at 8 p.m. Dinner is by reservation only before the show, so be sure to get in touch with DeLuna's Cafe if that's something you're interested in. Pauli O'Keery is an award-winning and world-touring bass player, vocalist, and songwriter. She's back in the Northwest with a brand-new band, The Rhythm Method. DeLunas.com for more information about that. I've played some Pauli O'Keery on the local show lately, and they're quite good.
And you can hear them probably tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. One last event. Sunday the 12th, JC's Race. Sandpoint High School hosts competitive 5K race for runners and walkers and a 1K fun run for kids that benefits local children with cancer or life-threatening illnesses. This is important, everyone. The run starts at the 5K at 8:30 a.m. and the 1K at 9:15. There's going to be face painting, a jumping castle. There's going to be popcorn, an expo, and silent auction. This goes for an extremely good cause, and I cannot encourage you enough to get out. JC's Race, Sandpoint High School. And if you want more information, you can go to JC's, JACEYS -race.com.
Well, we're just about out of time. You've been listening to the KRFY Morning Show. Thank you for tuning in today. Thanks to our guest, Susan Fiskin, coming in to talk about Playboy Mansion memoirs. And the subtitle there, Lessons Learned from the Front Lines of the Sexual Revolution. Stay tuned for Bird Note and then Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long.
And our guest next week.
That's right. Next week, tune in on Tuesday to hear Susie Prez and Chris Bessler talking with Terry Fortnier, Executive Director of Bonner General Health. That's at 8 a.m. on Tuesday.
And on Thursday, Jack and Jim will be joined by Jim Zuberbühler with the Long Bridge Swim. So put on your bathing suits. We're going to make swim talk on Thursday.
This is 88.5 KRFY Ponderay.